Lowe's knows that no matter your paint or stain project, saving is at the top of your to-do list. Save now with buy one, get one half off select paints, stains, and primers from top brands like Valspar, HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, and Cabot via Visa gift card rebate. Find more Memorial Day deals now at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 5/15 through 5/28.
I was looking for a quiet place to retreat and focus on finishing my article. When I came across a charming house in Savannah, Georgia on Airbnb, I thought I'd hit the jackpot. The photos were gorgeous, sunlight streaming through tall windows, hardwood floors, and a writing nook overlooking a garden. The reviews were glowing too. Guests praised the host's attentiveness and called it a hidden gem. I booked it immediately. A week-long workcation in a picturesque house sounded like exactly what I needed to finish my article. Little did I know, the charm ended at the front door. I arrived on a scorching August afternoon, my car packed with a suitcase, laptop bag, and a folder stuffed with notes. As I turned down the street, my excitement dimmed. The neighborhood looked nothing like I'd imagined. Instead of quaint homes and tree-lined sidewalks, I saw boarded-up houses, graffiti-covered walls, and a suspiciously high number of police cars patrolling the area. Maybe I took a wrong turn, I said to myself, double-checking the address. But no, this was it. The house itself matched the photos, clean, bright, and welcoming. I convinced myself that the neighborhood was just rough around the edges. After all, I'd be spending most of my time inside working. I unpacked, set up my laptop at the writing nook, and tried to settle in. Even so, I couldn't rid myself of the lingering feeling that something was off. Every time I looked out the window, I saw people lingering on the sidewalks, staring at the house. Once, I even caught a man pacing back and forth across the street looking at my car. One night, I was startled awake by what sounded like muffled voices outside. Peering through the curtains, I spotted two figures standing on the sidewalk, gesturing toward the house. They didn't seem to notice me, and after a few minutes, they walked away. I told myself they were just passing through. But the following night, the unease escalated. Around 11 p.m., while working late, I heard something hit the side of the house. It was a faint thud, followed by silence. When I looked outside, nothing seemed out of place. Still, the creeping suspicion that someone else was there wouldn't go away. On the fifth night, as I sat at my laptop, the neighborhood was unusually quiet. The kind of silence that presses on your ears, making you hyper-aware of every creak and rustle. That's when I heard a scratching sound. At first, I thought it was an animal, but the sound was like someone testing the window frame. I felt a knot form in my chest. I crept toward the front window, careful not to make a sound, and peeked through the blinds. A figure stood there, hunched over the window, their hands pressed against the glass. I ducked down, my pulse pounding. Grabbing my phone, I crawled to the corner of the room, out of sight. My fingers trembled as I dialed 911. "There's someone trying to get into my house," I whispered to the dispatcher, giving her the address. "Stay on the line," she said calmly. "Officers are on their way." Those minutes felt impossibly long, like they'd never end. The scratching grew louder, followed by a dull thud, as if they were trying to force the window open. I held my breath, clutching a heavy book like it was a weapon. Then the noise stopped. I peeked out again. The figure was gone. Blue and red lights illuminated the street a few minutes later. Two officers knocked on the door, and I let them in, still shaking. They searched the property, finding nothing but fresh scratch marks on the window frame and footprints leading to the back fence. "Looks like someone was trying to break in," one of them said. "Probably thought the house was empty." "But it's not," I replied, my voice cracking, "and this isn't the first time I've felt watched." The officers advised me to stay somewhere else for the night. They offered to file a report and promised to patrol the area more frequently. As they left, one of them looked around the neighborhood and muttered, "You're brave, staying here alone." The next morning, I called the host. He answered cheerfully, but his tone shifted when I explained what had happened. "This area has It's quirks, he said vaguely. Quirks? I snapped. Someone tried to break in last night. Why didn't you mention the crime in your listing? He paused for a moment before finally confessing. It's happened before, a few times, but it's just part of the area's charm, you know? I hung up, my blood boiling. I packed my things and left that afternoon, furious at the host's casual attitude toward his guest's safety. I reported the incident to Airbnb, attaching photos of the scratch marks and a copy of the police report. They refunded my stay and said they'd investigate the host, but the experience stayed with me. Every time I travel now, I research not just the property, but the neighborhood too. That house may have looked like a dream in the photos, but it turned into a nightmare I'll never forget. When you're a photographer, finding the right setting can make or break a project. And when I rented this house in Denver this past March, I was looking for a space where I could relax after hours of trekking around the city with my camera. The Airbnb listing seemed perfect, affordable, and located in a quiet neighborhood. The host's description mentioned that the house had two stories and a basement, with the latter listed as unoccupied storage. Sounded ideal to me. The house itself was...
The best piece of financial advice I've ever received is to pay yourself first. That's why now with every paycheck I receive, I start by putting a little bit away for those rainy days. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns recommends a diversified portfolio that can help you weather all of the market's ups and downs. Using Acorns, before I knew it, I had a couple $1,000s in a little nest egg account. Sign up now and join the over 14 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $25 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint or stain project, saving is at the top of your to-do list. Save now with buy one, get one half off select paints, stains, and primers from top brands like Valspar, HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, and Cabot via Visa gift card rebate. Find more Memorial Day deals now at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 5/15 through 5/28.
Charming, with wooden floors, a retro kitchen, and a soft couch that practically begged me to sink into it. Nothing out of the ordinary happened during the first 2 days. I'd spend my mornings out on shoots, evenings editing photos, and nights falling asleep to the sound of the radiator. It was exactly what I needed, until it wasn't. On the third night, I was working late on my laptop when I noticed a soft noise, almost like someone moving beneath me. At first, I thought it was the radiator acting up, but the sound wasn't mechanical. It was irregular, like someone dragging something heavy across the floor. I paused, listened, and shook it off. I figured it must have been the house settling or maybe a neighbor. The listing had been clear, the basement was unoccupied, so I told myself to let it go, but the next night, it happened again. This time, it was unmistakable. I was in the kitchen, heating up leftovers, when I heard the distinct sound of wood under pressure. My heart skipped. I paused the microwave, standing as still as possible to listen carefully. The sound came again, this time followed by what sounded like a muffled thump. I tried to rationalize it. Maybe it was a branch hitting the side of the house or an animal trying to get in, but the sound seemed to come directly below my feet. I looked toward the basement door at the end of the hall. It was closed, the padlock hanging loosely from the latch. Why would the padlock be undone? In the morning, I texted the host, mentioning the noises. His reply was quick but dismissive. Old houses make all kinds of sounds, nothing to worry about. The way he spoke so casually rubbed me the wrong way, but I didn't push it. That evening, I tried to focus on editing photos, but the noises started again, this time louder. It wasn't just shuffling now, I could hear movements like someone pacing. I grabbed a broom and approached the basement door. My hand trembled as I turned the handle, but the door wouldn't budge. It was stuck. I leaned closer, trying to listen through the wood. That's when I heard a low, raspy cough. I stumbled back. Someone was down there. I spent the rest of the night barricaded in the bedroom, the door locked, the broom still by my side. When morning came, I called the host again, this time demanding answers. "Are you sure the basement is unoccupied?" I asked. "Well," he hesitated, "technically, there's someone down there, but he's harmless." "What?" My voice rose. "You said it was empty." "He's a long-term tenant," the host admitted. "He's been there for years. I don't include it in the listing because it scares people off. But I promise, he keeps to himself." I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I hung up, furious and terrified. Whoever was in the basement hadn't been keeping to himself. He'd been moving around at night, listening through the vents and possibly trying to get upstairs. That night, I couldn't take it anymore. I packed my bags, planning to leave first thing in the morning. But as I was zipping up my suitcase, I heard the faint creak of the basement door. My blood ran cold. Slowly, I crept down the hall, peeking around the corner. The door was slightly open. I held my breath, backing away. The thought of confronting whoever was down there was too much. Instead, I grabbed my phone and turned on the flashlight, pointing it toward the door. A shadow shifted just beyond the threshold. "Get out!" I shouted, my voice shaking. "I'm calling the police!" The shadow didn't move at first. Then, slowly, the door creaked shut. I heard the sound of footsteps retreating down the stairs, followed by silence. I didn't wait for morning. I grabbed my bags, jumped in the car, and sped off into the night. The next day, I filed a report with Airbnb, detailing everything that had happened. They refunded my stay and assured me they would investigate the host. I didn't follow up after that, so I don't know what happened to the host. But to this day, I can't stay in a house with a basement. I work some seriously long hours as a nurse, and after what felt like the 100th exhausting shift in a row, I decided I needed a break. Not just a quick nap or a day off. I wanted to get away, recharge, and remind myself that life existed beyond hospital walls. That's how I ended up booking a cabin in Asheville, North Carolina. The listing promised solitude, stunning mountain views, and peace, which was exactly what I needed. The host, Alan, seemed friendly in his messages. He welcomed me to the property, said I'd fall in love with the cabin, and let me know I could text him if I needed anything. "Relax and enjoy," he wrote, signing off with a smiley face. He seemed so authentic that I didn't see a reason to doubt him. The cabin sat on the edge of a hill, surrounded by woods with floor-to-ceiling windows. It was perfect. The air smelled like pine, and the quiet was almost deafening after the constant beeping and chatter of the hospital. I spent the first evening curled up on the couch with a book, listening to the faint sounds of nature. I could finally take a proper breath for the first time in weeks. The next morning, Alan texted to ask how I'd slept. I thought it was a nice gesture and replied, "Great, the bed's super comfy. Thanks for checking in." He didn't respond, and I went about my day. I spent most of it hiking nearby trails, snapping photos, and marveling at how alive the world felt compared to the sterile monotony of my job. When I returned to the cabin in the late afternoon, another message from Alan popped up. "Hope you enjoyed the trails. The view from the porch is incredible at sunset." It felt a bit weird. I hadn't mentioned hiking in our earlier messages, and I hadn't told him I planned to spend the day exploring. Maybe it was just a lucky guess. I mean, what else do people do around here? I tried to forget about it and focused on making dinner, distracting myself from overthinking. By the third day, Alan's messages started to feel intrusive. They weren't overtly creepy, but they had this strange specificity that made me pause. "Did you get a chance to try out the rocking chairs on the porch yet? They're my favorite spot for coffee in the morning," one read. Another said, "The fireplace is great on chilly nights. Bet it feels cozy now." I hadn't mentioned using the porch or lighting the fireplace in my updates. The cabin was small, so it wasn't exactly hard to figure out what I might be doing, but something about his messages felt like he was narrating my actions as they happened. It made me self-conscious, like I was being watched. That evening, as I was settling in with a movie, another text came through. "The couch looks comfortable, doesn't it?" I stared at my phone, feeling my stomach churn. That wasn't a guess. I was sitting on the couch right then, a blanket draped over me and a mug of tea in my hand. I hadn't mentioned this to anyone, let alone Alan. I looked toward the large windows that wrapped around the cabin. It was pitch black outside, the glass reflecting the cozy interior like a mirror. But somewhere beyond the darkness, I imagined someone standing just out of sight, watching. I made an effort to let it go. Maybe Alan had a weird sense of humor, or maybe he was just overly familiar with his own property and made a lucky guess. Still, I decided to respond. "Thanks for checking in," I typed. "Everything's fine here, really enjoying the stay." After that, it was difficult to relax. I avoided looking at the windows, afraid I might see someone outside. When I finally crawled into bed, my phone clutched in my hand like a comforting presence. I woke up around 2 a.m. to a noise. It sounded eerily similar to someone walking on loose gravel, and I told myself it was just an animal. Raccoons, deer, maybe even a bear. It was the woods, after all. I held my breath, my heart thudding loudly as I tried to listen. The sound stopped, and the silence that followed seemed to smother the room. I didn't dare move. I stayed frozen in bed, gripping the blanket tightly and staring at the bedroom door, expecting it to swing open. Minutes passed, then an hour. Finally, exhaustion won, and I drifted off again. In the morning, I tried to convince myself it was just an animal, but as I sipped my coffee on the porch, I couldn't ignore the feeling that something was off. I decided to check the area around the cabin, hoping a logical explanation would calm my nerves. That's when I noticed the footprints, leading from the tree line to the windows on the side of the cabin. My chest tightened as I followed them. The prints stopped near the porch, right beneath the window where I'd sat on the couch the night before. Whoever had made them had stood there, just outside the glass, while I was inside, completely unaware. I ran back inside, locking the door behind me. My hands shook as I picked up my phone to call Alan, demanding an explanation. But before I could dial, another text came through. "I hope you're finding everything to your liking. Let me know if there's anything I can do to make your stay more comfortable." Something inside me snapped. This wasn't paranoia. This wasn't a coincidence. Alan had been here, watching me, and he wasn't even trying to hide it anymore. I packed in a frenzy, shoving clothes into my suitcase. I didn't care if I left things behind. I just needed to get out. Throwing my bag into the car, I started the engine and sped down the narrow dirt road, looking nervously at the rearview mirror the entire way. When I reached a gas station with cell service, I called Airbnb and reported everything: the texts, the footprints, the noises in the night. They assured me they'd investigate and offered a full refund. I drove straight home. A week later, a representative from Airbnb followed up. They'd removed Alan's listing and banned him from the platform. I learned through a friend in law enforcement that Alan had been reported before for similar behavior. In another case, a guest had caught him creeping around outside late at night. I thought I was careful, booking a highly rated property with glowing reviews. But none of that mattered when the host was the threat. Even now, months later, I can't book a rental without scrutinizing every detail. I always check the reviews, the locks, the windows. The thought of being watched, of someone standing just out of sight, has turned every vacation into a careful calculation of trust and risk. You never really know who's on the other side of that friendly text. I'd stayed in Airbnbs before, but I'd always gone for private rentals, entire apartments or small houses to myself. This time, though, I decided to save some money. I'd be in Austin for just a few days for a marketing seminar, and I didn't think much about booking a shared Airbnb. The listing described the host as friendly and respectful, and mentioned that guests might share the space with others occasionally. Sounded fine to me. The house itself was modest, but it had a warm, inviting feel. A single-story home with a front porch, a small garden, and a welcoming yellow door. When I arrived, my roommate for the week greeted me at the door. She introduced herself as Kelly. She was tall and thin, with long, dark hair and a laid-back vibe. At first look, she seemed perfectly normal, maybe a bit quirky. Her clothes were mismatched, and she had a habit of looking at the ceiling as if she were lost in thought. The host wasn't there, but that didn't seem unusual. Kelly explained that the host often rented out the house while traveling for work and trusted guests to come and go. We made small talk for a bit before I retreated to my room to unpack. That evening, I set up my laptop in the dining area to catch up on emails. Kelly sat on the floor in the living room, surrounded by candles. She didn't have the TV on or any music playing, just a row of small, flickering flames and a notebook in her lap. She caught me looking over. "Oh, don't mind me," she said. "I'm just aligning my energy for the evening." I wasn't quite sure what that meant, but I thought it was okay. "Cool," she chuckled. "You probably think I'm weird. It's okay. I get that a lot. I'm a witch." "A witch?" I asked, raising an eyebrow. "Yep. Not the broomstick kind, though," she said, winking. "More like energy work, rituals, that sort of thing. It's harmless, I promise." I smiled awkwardly and went back to my laptop, unsure how to respond. To each their own, I figured. As long as she wasn't sacrificing goats in the living room, I could handle a few candles. Over the next couple of days, her peculiar quirks became more noticeable. Kelly often hummed to herself, a strange, low melody that didn't sound like any song I'd ever heard. She'd spend hours in the backyard, talking to herself in a language I couldn't understand, while arranging rocks in odd patterns. Once, I caught her sprinkling something that looked like salt around the perimeter of the house. "Protection," she explained when she noticed me watching. "It keeps bad energy out." The strangest thing, though, was her suitcase. She kept it in the living room instead of her room and never seemed to open it. It was old and battered, with peeling leather and a rusted clasp. One evening, I couldn't hold back my curiosity anymore and decided to ask. "Oh, that's just my tools," she said. "Everything I need for my practice." Her tone made it clear she didn't want to elaborate, so I let it drop. On my last night, I returned to the house after dinner to find it eerily quiet. Kelly was usually in the living room by then, surrounded by her candles or scribbling in her notebook. But tonight, she was gone. Her belongings, her suitcase, the candles, even the rocks from the backyard were still there, but there was no sign of her. I checked the kitchen, the bathroom, even the backyard. Nothing. Her bedroom door was wide open, revealing an empty, unmade bed. By this point, I was more confused than concerned. Maybe she'd stepped out for a late-night walk or a last-minute errand. Still, it was strange that she hadn't taken her things. I went to bed. The house felt different without her presence. Heavier, somehow. The next morning, Kelly still hadn't returned. I decided to text the host to let them know. To my surprise, the response was immediate and unsettling. "I'm sorry, but I don't know who you're talking about," the host wrote. "There shouldn't be anyone else staying there." What did they mean? No one else? Kelly had been here the whole time. We'd talked, shared meals, even joked about her rituals. She wasn't imaginary. I stared at her suitcase. It was the only thing left of her, sitting in the middle of the living room like a silent accusation. Against my better judgment, I unlatched the clasp and opened it. The smell hit me first. A mix of old leather, earth, and something metallic. Inside there were no clothes or toiletries, just a jumble of random objects. A bundle of dried herbs, a cracked mirror, a small vial of reddish liquid, and a stack of handwritten notes. The notes were filled with symbols and phrases I didn't understand. I slammed the suitcase shut and backed away. Who was Kelly? Why had the host denied knowing her? Grabbing my phone, I called the host. Their voice was calm but insistent. "I swear, I haven't rented to anyone else. You're the only guest I approved. If someone else is there, you need to leave immediately and call the police." I didn't need to be told twice. I packed my things, my eyes darting to every shadow and corner. Was Kelly still here? Hiding somewhere? Had she been playing some kind of twisted game with me? I spent the night in a hotel, unable to shake the unease that clung to me. The next day, I reported everything to Airbnb, from the strange rituals to the host's denial of Kelly's existence. They assured me they'd look into it, but I never heard back. To this day, I don't know who Kelly really was or what her intentions might have been. All I know is that I'll never stay in a shared Airbnb again. The thought of someone like her slipping into my life, even for a few days, still gives me chills. If these Airbnb nightmares made you rethink your next booking, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe for more spine-chilling stories. Have you ever had a bizarre or creepy travel experience? Share it in the comments. I'd love to hear all the unsettling details. Send this video to a friend who swears by vacation rentals. They might think twice next time. And remember, a high rating doesn't always mean a safe stay. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next nightmare.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.